From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Could President Biden's less than stellar performance on the debate stage last week tarnish the electoral chances of Florida Democrats?
I mean, the debate performance was awful. Everyone, including the president, has acknowledged that. And I think that has ramifications nationwide, and that includes Florida.
Also this week, a new law allowing religious chaplains to be school counselors could have some unintended consequences.
There certainly will be Satanists who apply for programs in Florida to become chaplains.
We'll also talk with the author of a new report on how climate change could hit Florida's coastal communities over the next 25 years, and we'll learn which state universities have less than a passing grade when it comes to some of their signature programs. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end of week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. After President Joe Biden's disastrous debate performance last week, state political experts and operatives of all party affiliation are more skeptical of his already slim chances of winning Florida in his reelection bid. Tristan Wood reports they're also saying a lackluster showing from Biden could spell down-ballot disaster for Democrats.
Republicans in Florida have been doing a victory lap this week after Biden's widely panned performance. Governor Ron DeSantis took his shots at a press conference.
You compare him to 2019, to that debate, it's been a really significant decline. And the idea that that decline is going to stop, that somehow you can make it to age 86, given the trajectory, is a joke. And everybody knows that's a joke.
The debate performance has even stunned Democrats, like political consultant Kevin Kate.
I mean, the debate performance was awful. Everyone, including the president, has acknowledged that, and I think that has ramifications nationwide, and that includes Florida.
Leaked internal polling has the president losing 7 of the swing states that were key to his victory in 2022 by even larger margins after the debate. While it was unlikely the president would win Florida even before the debate, Florida Democrats have been hoping to use a strong top-of-the-ticket draw to turn the tides in several local races across the state. UCF political science professor Aubrey Jewett says keeping turnout high is key for Florida Democrats.
If Democratic turnout rises to very solid levels, they ought to be able to pick up maybe one Senate seat in Tallahassee area, maybe 6 or 8 House seats in the Florida legislature, because there was 13 seats that Democrats lost in the Florida House that were won by Biden. And the reason they lost is because turnout was so dreadful.
But to chair of the Republican Party of Florida, Evan Power, Biden's candidacy means Democrats won't get that enthusiasm from their base.
I see Joe Biden being a lot like Charlie Crist in his way he turns out voters, whether it's the black voting population or whether general hardcore Democrat voters are not going to be inspired by a guy who's not capable of leading the nation any longer.
If Biden does stay in the race, then young people in Florida may stay home, says political analyst and USF Professor Emerita Susan McManus. She believes the question many Floridians are considering is not Trump or Biden, but whether to even show up to vote at all.
Okay, if I vote, who am I going to vote for? But really, am I going to vote at all? That's the big question. And there are a lot of people in Florida that are in that category because 34% of our voters registered right now are millennials and Gen Zers. They're showing not much attention to this race already either. So I think the performance overall probably did not help his turnout numbers in Florida.
Florida Democrats are hoping ballot initiatives for abortion rights and recreational marijuana will also help with turnout. But Barry University political science professor Sean Foreman isn't convinced it will help Biden. He anticipates many Floridians who show up to vote on the ballot initiatives either plan on voting for Trump, a third party, or no one on the presidential ticket at all.
So I don't think they can count on the amendments carrying Biden to the top. They just have to hope that they get good turnout in the right pockets of the state to win local races.
Democrats across the country are having conversations about whether Biden should even stay on the ticket. With the current state of the race, Kate thinks Democrats' messaging going forward should not be centered on Biden, but more on attacking Trump.
The real message the Democrats need to be spreading right now is get registered, get ready. Democracy is on the line. And whether it's President Biden or somebody else's name at the top of the ticket, we have to do everything in our power to keep a felon potential dictator from the White House.
Recent polling has Biden trailing Trump by 10 points in Florida. I'm Tristan Wood.
In an issue that could wind up at the Florida Supreme Court, an appeals court this week ruled that two school boards are not required to reimburse State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company for medical expenses of three people injured in school bus accidents. A three-judge panel of the 4th District Court of Appeal ruled that the Broward County School Board and the Palm Beach County School Board are shielded from having to reimburse costs paid by State Farm under the state's no-fault or personal injury protection insurance system. But the ruling conflicted with a 2019 decision by the 2nd District Court of Appeals in a Lee County case that led the panel this week to take a step known as certifying conflict, potentially increasing the likelihood of the issue being resolved by the Supreme Court. State Farm filed the lawsuits after the school boards denied reimbursement, contending the legislature waived sovereign immunity in the 1997 law that made changes to PIP in the brief filed last year. It pointed to the 2nd District Court of Appeals decision. A new Florida law that lets school districts open their doors to volunteer chaplains went into effect at the start of the month. But as Margie Menzel reports, opponents have concerns about how those volunteers will be vetted and how the rights of students and their families will be protected.
Under the measure, school districts and charter schools could choose to allow chaplains to provide support, services, and programs to their students as long as certain requirements are met. Parents must provide written consent for their kids to participate, and schools would have to publish lists of the volunteer chaplains and their religious affiliations. But some opponents, like Ryan Jane with the Freedom From Religion Foundation, worry the program could become a barrier to getting kids the help they need. He acknowledges that some volunteer pastors will recognize when it's time to refer students to someone with more training to help them.
But there's others who the only tool in their toolkit is pushing their personal religious beliefs.
Similar legislation has been filed in 14 other states, and Jane says it's been enacted in Texas and Louisiana in addition to Florida. He says his organization is watching the programs closely. If they learn of a chaplain promoting religion to students in a Florida public school,
we will be immediately reaching out to the school districts. We always try to resolve things without litigation. So the first step for us will be to talk to the school district and try to get them to correct things without having to file a lawsuit. But if we hear of a clear violation and we cannot work it out with the school, we absolutely would start drafting a lawsuit.
Jane says he wouldn't be surprised if the legislation leads to lawsuits from other groups as well. For example,
there certainly will be Satanists who apply for programs in Florida to become chaplains.
The Satanic Temple did not immediately respond to requests for comment, but they addressed a similar measure at the Utah legislature, saying they looked forward to getting involved. The bill failed. Here's Jane again.
That will absolutely open school districts to a legal challenge. So that's another potential pitfall school districts could fall into, is if they're going to open a chaplain program, they need to open it to everybody, including religions that they may not like so much.
And Governor Ron DeSantis seems to agree lawsuits are likely. When he signed the bill in April, he said he expected the measure to be challenged in court. But he says he doesn't think concerns about a violation of church and state are valid. He pointed to parts of the bill that make chaplain services optional.
This bill, when the chaplains come to campus, the parents have to consent for the student to receive services from there. So it's purely voluntary. This is not imposing anything that anyone doesn't want.
No one has announced a lawsuit against the bill yet. I'm Margie Menzel.
Florida saw a slight decrease last week in first-time unemployment claims as it headed into the Independence Day holiday period. An estimated just under 6,800 claims were filed in Florida during the week that ended June 29th. That, according to a report released midweek by the U.S. Department of Labor, that was down from a revised count of 7,300 claims during the week that ended June 22nd. It also marked the first week since the end of May that the count was below 7,000. Nationally, 234,000 initial claims were filed last week. That's up 4,000 from the week previous. Florida had a 3.3% unemployment rate in May. That was the same rate as in April. And the Florida Department of Commerce will release a June unemployment report coming up on July 19th. Coming up on Capitol Report, some state education officials aren't exactly thrilled about the academic achievement at two publicly funded universities.
I'm at the point where I'm prepared to start taking programs away from universities who can't produce a quality enough program.
The Union of Concerned Scientists is especially concerned about the state of Florida.
Florida is one of the highest risk states when it comes to climate change.
The question rages on in Tallahassee. How much will a proposed constitutional amendment actually cost if it passes?
I don't think that trying to capture potential impact or potential costs of future litigation, developing any area of the law would be part of this statement.
And a new state law will force local Florida cities that use red light cameras for traffic law enforcement to be more forthcoming about where the money goes.
To have to like ticket people to death in order to exist as a municipal government, in my opinion, is inappropriate.
Two Florida universities received less than favorable remarks from the state about their 2023 test scores. Now officials at the schools are looking for solutions to keep the State University System Board of Governors from eradicating their licensure programs. Adrian Andrews has the story.
Florida A&M fell 55% below last year's approval goal for students seeking licenses in programs like pharmacy, nursing, physical therapy, and law degrees. FAMU's College of Law students shared the brunt of that, with only 41% of students passing the bar exam on the first try. The law school promised to get its scores up last year, but the latest data shows the school continues to underperform. That was one complaint made by Ken Jones, a member of the state's Board of Governors.
You've either got a teaching problem, the education that students are getting is not relevant to the test that's being taken and given, students aren't being prepared, or the academic requirements and the criteria for the students coming in are not set at the right level.
Jones aired his complaints at the recent Board of Governors panel in Orlando. FAMU President Larry Robinson attended the meeting alongside other state university presidents. Robinson attributed FAMU's low test scores to poor management of at-risk students. He says the university just recently started making in-person study sessions a requirement for students who are failing a class or who are on the verge of flunking out of college.
What we see, you know, there's increases in all of them, but we're still not at the level that would change this from red to yellow or green.
Florida Atlantic University also received complaints from the state university system. Their nursing program performed 5% lower than the 86% standard. The Board of Governors Vice Chair Alan Levine said at the meeting, if something isn't done soon to improve the first-time pass rates, then both FAMU and FAU can kiss their programs goodbye.
I'm at the point where I'm prepared to start taking programs away from universities who can't produce a quality enough program that their students can get set free to go earn a living and earn their income.
William Eumanns of the FAMU National Alumni Association pushed back on Levine's comments. He believes FAMU can improve his test scores as long as the university is given the resources to do so.
I believe that FAMU will see increases in the rates because the university's proven leadership.
FAMU has started addressing the Board of Governors' needs. President Robinson says he's reviewing the curriculum for pharmacy, nursing, and physical therapy programs, as well as the law school in Orlando. He told the chairman of the board that FAMU students will be better prepared for exams in the coming year.
Making the stronger correlation between the curriculum and the exams themselves and making the test prep a mandatory part of the student experience is going to make a significant difference.
Meanwhile, at FAU, the school looks to continue making strides to reach a 100% pass rating for its nursing and medicine programs, as well as improve its four-year graduation rates. I'm Adrian Andrews.
The Union of Concerned Scientists came to be more than half a century ago at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. An early priority for the group was reducing the threat of nuclear war. But other concerns, including climate change, have been adopted over time. The union's latest report on that subject is entitled Looming Deadlines for Coastal Resilience. Erica Spanger is a report author and the director of strategic climate analytics at the Union of Concerned Scientists. She says the report's forecasts are sobering.
We found that between now and 2050, so really essentially 25 years, climate change-driven sea level rise is going to expose more than 1,600 critical infrastructure assets coastwide to disruptive flooding at least twice a year.
The report defines the term critical infrastructure.
From the schools that students attend, to the emergency services that we rely on to keep us safe, to power and wastewater treatment plants that provide electricity and clean water.
And because Florida has more coastline than any other state, more than 8,000 miles, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, it's also subject to a greater coastal flooding impact.
Of that 1,600 critical infrastructure assets I mentioned, about 170 of those are in Florida, or more than 10% of that national total in that mid-century time frame.
Spanger is quick to add more coastal flooding is only one of several climate change consequences Florida faces.
Florida is one of the highest risk states when it comes to climate change. Between the heat you all experienced in May, the flooding you just endured in June, now possibly a record hurricane season that's brewing, Floridians have been hit really hard already just this year. And the flooding of critical infrastructure that my report is talking about is that sunny day flooding that you're seeing in those locations. And it's not a question of if, but of when.
She stresses the purpose of the report is not to induce panic, but preparedness.
Our report helps to break down the when so people can see this coming and get ahead of this reality. Because no one wants their community surprised by disruptive flooding.
However, Spanger also hopes the seriousness of the predictions might also spur government officials to actually do something.
They need their leaders facing this reality, too. That's the very least that we should expect of our leaders. And with so many people in Florida, so much infrastructure at risk, Floridians need leadership that's serious about planning and investment in Florida's climate resilient future.
6 days after the Union of Concerned Scientists report came out, a new Florida law took effect. It banned any mention of climate change in state statutes. Well, Regan McCarthy, welcome back to Capitol Report. Remember, it seems like only yesterday we were talking to you just a few weeks ago about a court case that challenged, as I remember, the financial impact statement that will be printed on the ballot in November. And that is alongside a proposed state constitutional amendment that would protect abortion access up to the point of viability. What's up with that?
Yep, that's right, Tom. I promised you that I would be back with updates, and here I am. So that case is still pending, and the state has appealed a ruling from a Leon County judge that found the current financial impact statement was misleading. And they said that was largely because the group that made that statement made it before, made it back in November, before the state Supreme Court ruled in April on an abortion case that triggered the current law that we have now, which bans most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. So the thing that's new with the case is that even while the case is pending, the estimators still met this week to take another look at that financial impact statement.
Okay, so what was the upshot of that meeting? I mean, do they have a final revised statement? What's happening there?
So at this point, they're still considering it. They had a 5-hour meeting this week during which they heard from opponents as well as supporters from the amendment. And they were just hearing from them about what they think, what aspects should be included or reflected by this statement. So one person that spoke with them was Jason Gonzalez. He works with Protect Women Florida Action. They're a partner with the group Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. And he said he thinks the proposal, if passed, is likely to result in several costly lawsuits. And he thinks that's part of the potential cost to taxpayers and that it should be explained in the financial impact statement. Here he is.
There are terms like viability that are not defined in the amendment. Healthcare provider, health of the mother. These things are not defined. They will be litigated endlessly. And it will be of extraordinary cost to the state.
So the estimators also heard from ACLU lawyer Michelle Morton. She was speaking for the amendment sponsor, the group Floridians Protecting Freedom. And she says that potential legal costs shouldn't be included in the estimate.
The court has been very clear, both now and in previous cases, that speculation about future litigation is not within the bounds of the financial impact statement. So again, I don't think that trying to capture potential impact or potential costs of future litigation, developing any area of the law, would be part of this statement.
Which begs the question, where do we go from here? What happens next?
So the Financial Estimating Impact Conference is scheduled to meet again next week. They'll continue to consider this matter. And no matter what happens, the conference is expected to move forward with this second look at this financial impact statement. Now, the case is also moving forward, and it will also continue to move forward. The people involved in that case say it's really looking at a larger question of, did that Leon County judge even have the right to rule in the case and say that the financial impact statement needed another look? Or is the state Supreme Court the only group or the only body that really has the ability and the purview to make those kinds of decisions?
Oh, lovely. Well, that will bring us to another update, I'm sure, pretty soon, Regan. And we'll be looking forward to hearing from you again as we get, some more developments on this story, because the clock is ticking. November is approaching and all this has to be resolved before then.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks, Tom. Talk to you again later.
Well, the actual 4th of July holiday itself may be in the rearview mirror, but extra state troopers will be patrolling Florida roads over the whole weekend. There's an estimated 3.9 million Floridians will be driving more than 50 miles as they travel for Independence Day vacations. The Florida Highway Patrol will be making sure those driving during the busiest summer holiday get to and from their destinations safely. They're going to be focusing on speeders, aggressive drivers, and those impaired by drugs or alcohol. FHP Lieutenant Jim Buford says his best advice for travelers is to leave early and slow down.
We definitely want everyone to keep their cool on the roadways. Be patient, be courteous, just be kind to the other motorists out there. Just remember, everyone's trying to get to their destination. Many people are going to visit family and friends. We all want to make sure everyone gets there safely.
Buford is also reminding drivers to get plenty of rest and check their vehicle maintenance before traveling long distances. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, a new state law will force cities to be more transparent with the public about their red light camera programs. They'll have to disclose how many people they ticket, how much money they make, and how contracts are awarded every year. WLRN's Danny Rivero found that for some cities in South Florida, these cameras are a moneymaker.
I'm going to swear you guys in. We're going to look at the video.
Once a month in the tiny city of West Miami, population about 7,000, people from all over Miami-Dade County crowd into the commission chambers to talk about right-hand turns.
Traffic's actually probably the main problem in this city.
Attorney Marcos Martinez runs these hearings.
This is like a major hub that connects the city of Miami and the city of Coral Gables and unincorporated Dade, all of which are much bigger jurisdictions, so everyone shortcuts through here.
Southwest 8th Street, Coral Way, Lejeune Road, and Red Road form the city borders. At 6 intersections throughout the 1-square-mile city, red light cameras are picking up drivers for violations. The people who show up want to fight the tickets. Martinez reviews all the contested cases. This is required under state law, that actual humans review the footage and that the findings can be contested.
I'm going to dismiss it, and if you just come to a complete stop, you won't see me again.
Many of the people who contested their tickets won. Martinez said a lot of them made a Miami right, slowing but not stopping when making a right turn on red.
It's basically what I saw the whole way over here. That's just how traffic gets flowing, and we certainly don't want traffic to get slowed down. So if you do it in a careful and prudent manner, what I call a Miami right, which 99% of the people here are familiar with and have done themselves, it's fine.
It's all subjective, though. What's fine to Martinez might look like a violation to city officer Ricardo Roque, who personally reviews all the times a camera picks up an incident.
Prudent and safe to me is different than for other people. So prudent and safe to me is a right turn on red under the 12 miles an hour. Over that, I don't see it. And my weight, he sees it because he sees a larger picture.
He estimates about 3,000 violations a month. The ticket is $158 if you pay it on time.
It was a right turn. I was with the traffic. The traffic was going the same direction.
Driver Miguel Delgado was caught by one of the cameras. Off the bat, he assumed that the city was just trying to shake him down for money.
I was guessing something like that. I was thinking about that. Many cities, they're making a lot of money with that kind of revenue.
After showing up to fight the ticket, he beat the case and walked away owing nothing. What sets West Miami apart from other cities that run red light cameras is the sheer amount of money the city makes on them. The city's annual budget is $9.2 million, and more than 15% of that revenue this year is expected to come from those cameras alone. That's more than double 2 years ago. West Miami Mayor Eric Diaz-Padron did not agree to be interviewed for this story. A total of 42 jurisdictions operate red light cameras across Florida, according to the State Department of Revenue. Nearly half of those cities are in South Florida, most of those in Miami-Dade. And the cameras are highly lucrative. For example, Aventura expects to make about 5% of its revenue this year from red light cameras. The city of Medley, 6%. And Opa-locka, 12%.
Wow.
That's Republican State Representative David Borrero from Sweetwater.
I would guarantee you that if you let the voters decide in Opa-locka, in West Miami, any city, any county where it's being implemented, that the voters would overwhelmingly, across party lines, vote to eliminate them.
That's exactly what happened in Sweetwater in 2019, back when Borrero was a city commissioner. This year, as a state legislator, Borrero sponsored a bill that would have created a statewide ballot amendment to let voters decide if they want these programs to exist. That bill failed, but the state did pass a new law that will require cities to publish yearly reports about red light cameras. They'll have to share how many people were ticketed, how much money the cameras made, and other information. Borrero said, that's a good start.
Cities should not be financing their entire budgets off of these systems. I mean, to have to like ticket people to death in order to exist as a municipal government, in my opinion, is inappropriate.
The new law went into effect July 1st, and those reports should start coming out this fiscal year. I'm Danny Rivero in West Miami.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Danny Rivero. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.